Okay. Well, we just had a very good conversation with your colleague, Dr. Mark Cucuzzella.
Which rolls right into this topic
perfectly.
And what is this? Faith wants to be my friend on Facebook?
That's only because I wanted to see.
She goes, wait, how did you get that? And I said, well, I got it on Facebook. Oh, I'm not friends with Steve and Jimmy. I need to be friends.
Is this Faith or Faith is friend?
This is Faith herself,
yeah.
What'd you put on your hands? It smells like lemon.
I had to girlify the room a little bit.
It smells like lemon in here now. Okay.
You want to do this?
What did you guys talk about?
I can tell you exactly what we talked about, but it rolls into exactly one of the topics. We talked about how many miles should you put on your shoes. We talked about the 10% rule. We talked about NSAIDs, and we talked about ICE.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You know, who's kicking us off? Faith, you did it last time. Scott, you're
such a good job.
You did an awesome job. You were like so professional. Scott and I looked back and went, whoa, we're done.
We're so unprofessional.
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it. I'll say I'm Faith Goss. You say I'm Don Freeman. Faith Goss is about Warren Don Freeman.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say you have to raise your game right now because this sucks.
Yeah.
You're better than Scott, you are better than this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm wondering, do you do, like, virtual consults? Because I think...
Okay, so we ready? Go ahead, Scott. Kick this thing off.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Faith Goss.
And I'm Don Freeman. And we are just having a ball tonight making these podcasts because tonight we have the Sock Doc, Dr. Stephen Gangemi, who, if you're a loyal TRN podcast listener, you know Stephen very well. And if you've seen some of the forums, some of you know him very well. Some of you may not like him very well because he's has some very strong opinions and very honest with his responses, which I love.
I think he stirs it up on purpose. I think he takes positions
some
just
might
so
say
he...
that.
But you know what? One thing about Dr. Gangemi is he is there to defend his position and with good science. And he backs it up. And so
he's done his research.
If you're going to come with a position, be prepared to do some battle with some research behind you.
No, he said, she said, sea shit.
She said?
Yeah.
She in a seashell.
In
a woodchuck, could chuck.
You have to feed some, have some factual basis or else he will take you to the mat.
If you wanted
one of my patients asked me the other day why I had a website if I told people just to not come back.
Where is your website, Dr. Gangemi? If we wanted to find you and check out your great website.
You have to say it.
Oh.
yeah.
At sockdoc.com.
Wow.
Good job.
I'm impressed. You did that exactly right. Except there's a dash in there.
Yeah, okay, so... sock-doc.com.
Every time.
If you Google sock doc, you can find it.
Oh, he's easy to find.
Sock-doc.com.
Say it again.
Sock-doc.com.
Wow. That's exactly right.
And tonight in the studio, I'm wearing my Stretching is for Bozos shirt, which can I believe, be ordered from the Sock Doc site.
It's an awesome shirt.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I think we should
pretty
take a picture.
Pretty much giving those away for free now.
There are a few stains on that shirt.
I'm an aggressive eater.
Well, we have some interesting topics tonight.
But you wanted to tell a story first that you thought maybe Steve would think would be entertaining.
Well, you know, we know that Dr. Gangemi has some of his endurance resume in the triathlete world, from the tribe, as I like to refer to them. Because, he's done multiple, I think 18 or 20 Ironman, and he's gone to Kona, and so it is not easy to
he's
go to
qualified.
Kona. Hey, it's not easy to go there. You have to be an elite athlete just to get a ticket to play with that group.
Or like Hawaii,
you can go as a spectator, but if you want to wear a bib, you've got to do some amazing times,
a race bib.
So yeah, thanks, Scott. and so I had the good opportunity and good fortune to participate in a local long course, half Ironman is the distance, but it's called a long course. So there is a ride, a swim of 1 mile and a ride of 56 and a half marathon, 13.1. And there was a group that said, hey, let's get together and do the relay, which was sounded like a good idea. And they were looking for a runner, and they go, well, Don runs, doesn't he? And I reminded him, I don't necessarily run fast, but I can run steady for a long time. And so they looked around and couldn't find anybody else. And so I was I was nominated. And so I show up there, and they're a different group, the triathlete.
Can you say spandex?
That's part of the story, Scott. So they the swimmers do their swim thing, and they go out, and they go around and swim their rectangle. And they come out, and then they get on the bikes, and they're very quick about taking off and getting changed and doing their transition. All that's very exciting. And so now I show up for my run part, and I'm ready to go, and I'm watching these athletes come by, and I'm getting excited. I it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Were you wearing your dolphin shorts?
No, I was not, but I should have been. And so it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And usually when we start races, it's, you know, daybreak, 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm feeling like, man, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But when the bell rang, I was excited to go, because you get excited. And the great thing about it is most of these people had swam for a mile. They had ridden 56 miles on their bike, and I came up with fresh legs. So I'm feeling pretty good at this point, with this one exception. If you ever wanted to stand out in a group and look completely different, out of place, that was me. Because everybody was wearing, like you said, Scott, spandex. They had the tight, tight shorts on. They were wearing the minimalist type shoes, a lot of Newtons out there, a lot of race flats that were out there.
What do you call the, I want to call them onesies, but they're not onesies. That's what a baby wears.
Tri-suit?
Like a singlet?
Singlet. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking
they
of.
They were
singlet.
In singlets. They were zipped down to their navel, and they had all kinds of sponsors going on all over these things. And so, and they were looking very much all alike. I mean,
professionals?
They all looked professional, but you could tell that they were all involved in this event. The only way you could tell I was involved is I also had a bib that looked like theirs, and that was the only thing. In fact, I was referred to as, hey, trail guy. What's that, Steve?
What were you wearing?
Well, I'm telling you. If you want to know what I was wearing, go out to your local trail and take a look around, because that's what I was in. I was wearing our uniform, the trail runner's uniform. I had a pair of Patagonia shorts on. I had my Trail Runner Nation shirt on, so I was representing our group, and the Cocopelli was definitely on my calf. I had my water bottle that I was carrying, the trail type.
Carrying your handheld water bottle.
Handheld, that's right. And I had my Hokas on.
Oh.
Now, Steve, I know you're a minimalist over there. We're kind of playing around with this Hoka, and by the way, I'm strong.
By
very
mean
Scott and I.
Yeah.
One of the three, just to give you some ammo, Faith tried them, and she sent them back.
Ouch.
They were horrible.
Oh, no, they're wonderful. So
okay. are we gonna let Steven talk?
Yeah, in a second. I want to finish my story.
I'm enjoying listening.
We could have done this before we called you, Steven,
you know,
right?
It's 11 o'clock on the East Coast,
he stayed up.
Wrap it up, Don.
Okay. So, at any rate, I was known as trail guy out there, and they said, what are you
doing?
Was your
entire run on the road, or was some of it a trail 13 miles?
Oh, no, there was like a little 10-yard section that had dirt in it that we had to get from one trail to the other. That was the only dirt I got to experience. And so it was all on a road. And so I was very much, I felt, you know, had you said, Don, you can sneak behind this large tree and slip into a set of spandex and a singlet, I might have gone that direction, because I did feel a little out of place.
Yeah. Those guys are athletes.
Oh, yeah.
They are serious athletes. I don't.
It's a different world between them and especially trail runners. And I mean, even road runners, but especially trail runners, yeah.
When I went up with my goo wrapper to the aid station lady and said, I don't know if you guys call them aid station people, but I said, hey, I've got this wrapper. Where's your garbage? And she says, oh, you're so nice. Yeah, just throw it on the ground.
Because a triathlete just throws it wherever they want.
Yeah, so I learned that. I kind of got used to that, throwing the cups down. I said, I'll take two cups just so I could throw both of them.
Yeah, so throw one liberating. At somebody else and just throw the other one on the ground.
All right, well, we want to talk to the Sock Doc about his new series of articles on sports injury prevention and treatment. He has a four-part series available on his website. And coincidentally, our previous podcast kind of touched on this when we talked to Dr. Mark Cucuzella. But we wanted to get into a little more depth of a couple of those topics that we talked with Dr. Mark about, and that is injuries and how to treat them. And I have to, you know, here I've been doing this for a little while, not decades, but probably about 5 or 6 years now. And I find myself falling into the trap like I think so many of our listeners get into. We're out there, we're training, we get done at the end of the trail run or run, and we're feeling a little bit of pain, we're seeing a little bit of inflammation, and so I grab my ice cup, and I start doing some ice therapy, and I pop down some ibuprofen, thinking, that swelling, I want to get that swelling down because the swelling is not good. So I'm popping ibuprofen and I'm doing some ice therapy. What do you say to that?
I'm disappointed in you.
That's the worst. I'm disappointed.
That hurt me.
Stretching is worse?
Stretching is worse? I wasn't stretching because I hate to stretch.
Well, at least you didn't stretch. So what do I say to that? I say that you're doing pretty much what most people would do. You're doing what, and not just runners, but, you know, physicians, athletes of any type, trainers, you know, coaches. That's what we're sort of brought up to do from, you know, the time you banged your knee falling off your bike when you're, you know, you're 3 or 4 years old. So it's kind of like that tired and true way, like we've talked about with stretching. You know, these are therapies that really don't work. They've been around for a long time based off what some might call junk science. And, you know, they're just sort of inundated in our brains, and we don't really question why they, you know, or their validity, and even look at their potential to perhaps cause harm. In other words, you know, you can say, well, I'm going to ice, you know, my muscle strain or my inflammation like you had there. But with the thought process that, okay, if this doesn't work, well, first of all, you think it's going to work, but if you think, well, if it doesn't work, it's not going to cause any harm. And I see, and especially when you get into NSAID use, you know, ibuprofen and aspirin and naproxen, that sort of stuff. I remember racing, you know, with my friends when I was in high school, and I hung out with, you know, guys, you know, 20, 30 years older than me from, you know, local running clubs, and we would, you know, do our races, and they would be passing around the ibuprofen before races sort of as a preventative. And people still do that today. You know, they think, you know, I can get ahead of the game by doing some of these, you know, certain therapies to perhaps prevent a problem before it even happens, and then if they do get injured, they're sort of ahead of the game. And that's true, but there's just better ways to do that, more natural ways to do that, by training, changing your diet, by changing how you live, by changing obviously how you train, so you don't need to use a artificial and typically ineffective or even harmful form of therapy.
So you talk about alternatives. What alternatives are you suggesting that we use?
Well, one thing I talk about in the first aid series that I wrote is kind of, you know, speaking of ice, since that's sort of the first line of defense. You know, if anybody gets injured, what do you do? Ice it. You know, I got to ice it. And that part of that comes from what most of us heard is, you know, RICE, that acronym: rest, ice, compression, and elevation. And the ice, you know, as I discuss in the articles, especially in part two, is really, you know, a lot of people are starting to question if ice is even valid. And, you know, how much inflammation do you actually want to prevent when you get injured, because your body is actually creating inflammation to heal tissue. And if you don't create inflammation to a certain degree, then you're not going to repair, you're not going to repair tissue, you're not going to rebuild tissue, you're not going to heal properly. So inflammation isn't necessarily a bad thing. Everybody's worried about inflammation and they think inflammation is sort of the end all of an injury, but it's actually an important and necessary response that our body has when something has gone awry. So sticking an ice pack on something and just trying to knock down the injury most often isn't a good idea, especially when you get into, actually clearing out the inflammation from that area, because one thing you want to do when you're injured and inflamed is obviously you want to heal, and therefore that has to do partly with removing waste products from where the area that is injured, and that has to do with your lymph system. And icing that area can really inhibit the proper lymph flow away from the injury site, and therefore you could actually be inflamed and injured even longer by icing that area. So that's kind of what I discuss about the ice. Compression is actually probably the best part of the whole RICE treatment, the C for compression there. And, you know, that basically means using a sort of tight, not a constricting type of bandaging, but, you know, just compressing an area. And I would even go further to say, slight general manipulation, meaning, you know, deep tissue compression or deep tissue massage. Obviously not stirring up an injury or creating extra friction or heat, not on the injury at the time, but even around the injury. In other words, if you sprained or strained an ankle while you're out running the trails, or if you tripped on a triathlete in your local
gym, I did try to trip a few. Yeah.
you would actually be looking for compression points / trigger points in the calf muscle. Sort of distant from the actual area of injury, these supportive muscles that are now going to have some imbalances in them due to the injury of the ligaments and tendon of the ankle. So you would actually compress, you could compress, meaning wrap the ankle and even elevate it to some degree. That's still fine, but not ice it, and then compress and treat some of the more meaty, soft tissue, the muscles in your calf, such as your soleus and your gastroc, rather than try and manipulate the area that you just injured, in this example, the tendons. And last is the E for for rest. And rest is a good idea to a certain degree, but also, as many people now know, active rest is more important or more beneficial than just being sedentary and sitting on the couch. And active rest and recovery can be very beneficial for not just healing up from a hard workout, but also for an injury. And that's one of the reasons why, we see more, and this is, even over the last, decades, where you see now more soft casts, even when someone injures, breaks a bone, so they can hopefully move some of the muscles around that area. And obviously let the bone heal. And, you see more soft, cervical collars, say, than hard collars. There's a recognized benefit to working soft tissue and being able to move a joint as much as possible while still letting that area heal. So basically what it comes down to is the R is good. You want active rest rather than just stagnant rest, I guess you could say. Ice, probably not. I would say almost never, unless the inflammation was life-threatening or widespread. Perhaps you got in a car accident or something like that, and the injuries were just so severe you would maybe need a little bit of ice for a very short period of time. Compression is always good, and elevation to a certain degree.
I had a question on the compression part of it. In the last year or 2 years, maybe I'm a little bit behind the times, maybe it's 3 years, people have gotten into these compression wear, whether compression socks or compression shirts or whatever. Would those help in, like, I have a pair of compression socks, recovery socks. So at the, I throw those on sometimes after a long run, and maybe it's
psychological, but I think that helps. Or what do you think about those?
Yeah. So you actually, you don't run in them, but you run after a long, like the day, you wear them after the long run, like the day after or later that day?
You know, I've kind of played with both. Right now in the summer, I don't. In the winter, I use the compression on my, so what are they, calf compression things?
Those are your calves, Scott. Yeah. Below your knee and above your ankle, calf.
And I run in them.
Anatomy lesson.
Yeah. So my question is two-part. One, by using these compression gear, is it good preventative medicine? And then is it good recovery medicine?
I would say the latter, not the former, meaning they're good for recovery to a certain degree. Many times I've recommended actually compression socks is for people adapting actually a minimalist type of footwear, which, you know, I'm very much into. If someone, you know, is used to wearing a typical conventional running shoe or even walking shoe and they want to get to a more minimal one, which hopefully they do, and even walking, and if they want to run barefoot, what often happens, what always happens is the Achilles and the soleus muscles, the Achilles tendon and the soleus muscles are naturally going to elongate because they've shortened for over their years of being in the typical conventional shoes. So now they start going to a lower drop, zero drop barefoot type shoe. And you get some tenderness in your calf and your Achilles, and that's sort of normal. And that's when compression can really help. And I've seen some pretty quick recoveries or adaptations into the barefoot minimalistic shoe. In other words, someone can get there quicker by working those muscles and those tendons by sticking a pair of compression socks on after that, or, you know, the day after, you know, they go for a barefoot walk or run if they're a little bit sore. I see a lot of people still running them. You probably saw a lot in that triathlon, right? You know,
I did.
You see a lot of people. Yeah, sure. I think they're, I like to say I'm up to date on all the science, but of course I don't think really anybody can be unless you sit in front of the computer or the TV all day long or, you know, where you get your information. But I don't think there's really even good evidence that those help with performance and whether it's endurance or anything like that in terms of muscular or physical endurance. You know, you see a lot of people wear them. I run with groups, and I see a couple people always wear them, and I also hear them talk about their injuries the whole time too. And you know, that's like really the whole premise, you know, of me developing the Sock Doc site is really to get people to ask themselves the question, why are you doing something? You know, why are you stretching? Why are you using ice? Why are you using NSAIDs? Why are you wearing those shoes? Like, why are you doing it? If you have a good reason, I'll listen to it. But most people don't have the answer to why they're doing something other than because someone told them to or because they're injured. You know, they don't really take into effect the consequence of doing something. So if you always have to wear compression socks to, dampen some of your pain so you can run, or if you always have to wear them the day after a long run because you're just so sore, well, something's not right there, you know, and that needs to be looked into. Can you still wear the compression socks to sort of help you out there? Sure, I think definitely. But, you know, if every Monday morning or every Monday and Tuesday, you got to wear your compression socks all day because your legs are killing you because of your long run on Sunday, well, you're not training right is what it comes down to.
I like to wear them to look cool.
Looking cool is cool. That's fine. And for you, I recommend that.
Thanks. I need a little something.
Well, Doc, I wear them when I run. And I don't know if it's psychological, but I notice a difference when I run without them. I get more pain in my knee. I don't know what it is. But I was thinking maybe it prevents, like, vibration of my IT band or something by compressing below the injury. I don't know, but I run in them and I love them.
Right, but so if you, when you don't run in them, if you ever do not run in them, and you have ITB or knee issues or whatever, and then you put the socks on and you don't, that's great, but you shouldn't be like, you shouldn't need to do that. I mean, so right. You're not fixing anything, right? And I read some little study, and this was a while ago, so I don't know, maybe I'm off on this, but I'll throw it out there anyway. But when compression socks were getting kind of popular, like a few years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, I remember reading something about someone did a little study. I think it was only like 12 or 15 athletes, and they put, you know, some of them in compression socks, and then the other ones they just put in like tube socks that were just kind of like, they were the same like height up on their calves, but they weren't actually compressive.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw a very similar result between the two of them, you know, leading into that a lot of it was psychological, like, right. like you're saying, Faith. You know,
which
you put these things on, and you're like, yeah, you do, right? I mean,
yeah,
that helps, mm-hmm. you know?
So, I wanted to touch on one of the statements you made in the first part of this series that you talk about the stressors that cause injury or accentuate injury. And
yeah.
a lot of that is training too hard or too often, which makes sense, or not enough rest, improper diet, not the right footwear, and also can be some imbalances in your life with emotional stress or other kinds of stress in your life.
Sure.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because you know, when we say you're training too hard or too often, I mean, there's a fine line, I think, where you need to go out and stress your body so that it can break down and your body can rebuild it and make it stronger. But then there's that fine line where you can go too far and really cause serious injury, not just the kind of muscle and tissue breakdown that you want so that you can become stronger next time.
Yeah. And that's true. And the thing is, it's so individualized, but there are definitely general guidelines to follow. You know, I'm all for training hard. I mean, I love training hard, or else I wouldn't have done 20 Ironmans. But you know, you have to be smart about your training. It's not just that no pain, no gain philosophy, for the most part. You know, what it comes down to is why does somebody get injured? And if you had to pick just one thing, I mean, of course there's not just one, but if you had to pick like one sort of cover all for them, for all the things that might cause an injury or lead up to an injury, it would be stress. And it comes down to too much stress in someone's life, which gets back into like we talked about a couple of times ago, or maybe last time, with the sock doc training principles of, you know, the training formula of basically, you know, if you have too much stress, that's going to affect how hard you can train and how well you can recover. And that stress can be, you know, emotional stress. And that's someone who's working maybe 60, 70 hours a week, not sleeping well, might have problems at work, problems at home, you know, just way too much on their plate. That can be dietary stress, which is huge, obviously. That's too much sugar in someone's diet. That's too many inflammatory type fats, which would be hydrogenated fats, vegetable oil type fats, processed fats, caffeine would be in there, any of those sorts of things. And, you know, you could look at physical stress from past injuries that sometimes you think you might have recovered from, but can still maybe be throwing off your gait and could be sort of, as I say, coming back to haunt you, throwing off your gait while you're running. In other words, you might have had a shoulder injury from playing high school football. And even though that shoulder doesn't hurt anymore, the way your shoulder and your opposite leg, you know, work in harmony with your gait, your right shoulder and your left leg, and vice versa on the left shoulder and the right leg, that shoulder injury, if it hasn't properly healed or has caused a compensatory pattern in your gait, might now be part of maybe your left knee pain 10, 20, 30 years later. It happens. Actually pretty common, more common than you might think. And physical stress can also be from footwear, from wearing a Hokas when you run, or whatever the hell those shoes are called.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, you don't pick on me. I think stretching is a physical stress, a big physical stress. I think orthotics are a huge physical stress, and that sort of stuff. So one of the things I talk about in this series is how that sets you up to create an injury. So they're predisposing factors, but also, if you get injured, if you're unlucky enough to get injured, they are also further aggravating factors, especially when you get into, and I know Faith wanted to talk about this a little bit tonight, is corticosteroid depletion, meaning your cortisol levels, which help balance out our blood sugars, which helps make other steroid hormones, which helps fight inflammation, that these hormone levels can, you know, become abnormal throughout the day and could eventually be depleted. And that can set us up for an injury, and that can also make it so we don't properly heal from an injury, and as can fatty acid imbalances. If you're eating a very poor diet, high in inflammatory type fats, that will set you up for an injury. And of course, if you get injured, the more inflammation, the worse, because you don't want widespread inflammation when you're injured. You want just enough inflammation to heal the injury. And if you already have chronic inflammation from your diet, mm-hmm. then you're going to be hurting, is what it comes down to. So that's another predisposing / aggravating type of factor. And actually, that's what gets into, which is in part 3 and 4 of the first aid here, of what it actually means when you take an NSAID, mm-hmm. a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. What if you take it and it helps you? It only means one thing, and that is that your fats in your body are out of balance, and that's because your diet's off in some degree or another, not because you're injured.
So let's talk about what are the signs of adrenal fatigue. I guess a lot of people don't know what the adrenal does in the first place.
I don't.
So what is the adrenal gland? Why is it important? And the signs of adrenal depletion in our training outside of inflammation.
Okay. Well, real simply, so your adrenal glands are these little walnut-sized glands. They're part of your hormonal system. They sit right on top of each one of your kidneys, so you've got two of them. Some people got one. And pretty much, so most people think of their adrenal glands as, you know, the adrenaline, right? Like fight or flight response, you know, when you're under a lot of stress, you make adrenaline. That comes from part of the adrenal glands, but pretty much for the meat and the meaty part of the adrenal glands, the cortex, the inner part, makes hormones. It makes some of our sex hormones. For guys, it makes our testosterone. For women, you're gonna get some of the estrogen from there. We make DHEA, which is a precursor to those hormones. We make a hormone called aldosterone, which some people might not have heard of, but it has a lot to do with electrolyte imbalances, or balancing electrolytes, I should say, in your body, especially sodium, hanging on to sodium. So actually when an athlete gets hyponatremia, which is a low salt content, a low sodium content in their blood, that's considered hyponatremia. And typically that's not from lack of salt in their diet, but actually fatigued adrenal glands, and therefore subsequently a low aldosterone level. And a one sign of that is actually, and we've all seen this, you see someone running in black spandex, right, Don? Those guys running in spandex, you see their spandex literally white, like pasted white. You guys have seen that, yes?
I tried to keep my eyes down on the pavement when I ran past those people.
I've seen it. I'll check it out.
Okay, I can tell you, especially from being in Kona 6 times, that it's you think, and granted, some of it might be the salty air coming from the ocean when you're in the race there, but the amount of white spandex singlets and speedos that have turned, or black ones that have turned mm-hmm. white because of the salt loss, and including chin straps, cycling helmet chin straps, and even just all over your body, you're losing a lot of salt. I always tell patients or people that if you come back from a run or a workout and you're sort of sitting around just hanging out and relaxing, and your dog comes up and starts licking your leg, it's because dogs like to lick the salt off your leg. And that's because you've lost a lot of salt, maybe more than what you should have. I mean, you obviously need some salt loss. It's natural in your sweat and your urine. But if you're dumping a lot, what's a lot? You can see it, and you usually crave salt too. If you're losing too much, you'll crave salt. Then it's typically because of a low aldosterone level and your adrenal glands being fatigued. And then the last part of the adrenal glands there is the so we have the sex hormones, the mineral corticoids, the aldosterone level, and then your glucocorticoid, which is primarily cortisol, which helps balance out your blood sugar. I like to tell people that a good way to look at cortisol is it sort of is like the other side of the teeter-totter or the seesaw, depending on where you grew up. on how you balance your blood sugar with your pancreas, with insulin. And, you know, obviously if you eat something sugary or a carbohydrate, your blood sugar, you know, insulin brings your blood sugar level back down after you eat that. And when your blood sugar is too low or you need to make some sugar, you need to make some sugar from protein in your liver. That's called gluconeogenesis. That's actually making glucose from proteins, from amino acids. Then that's done by cortisol. So cortisol will help bring your blood sugar level up, and insulin will help bring it down. So there's always a fine balance between your adrenal glands and your pancreas to balance out your blood sugar. And if you're out running on the trail for, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, even if you're getting some carbohydrates in, and even if actually if you're aerobic, you're going to start increasing your cortisol levels sort of naturally, just as a blood sugar balancing hormone response there. Especially if you do so without eating, your body's going to want to start making some extra sugar for some protein, as well as obviously breaking down stored glycogen levels, but your cortisol levels will naturally go up. And if that happens too much and too long, especially if you train too hard, then you can eventually deplete a lot of your cortisol levels and end up with lots of symptoms, such as injuries. Sleep problems are huge. Waking up in the middle of the night at any time, but especially 3, 4, 5 a.m. and you can't get back to sleep, or if you ever woke up with like really ravenous hunger, like you've got to go eat something, that's typically from high cortisol levels. If you're falling asleep and you get like a limb twitch, or we talked about this, I think the first time you guys had me on, you sort of get like a limb jerk or a body jerk. That's typically from a adrenal stress response. Getting dizzy when you stand up, like if I stood up too quickly, or they get out of bed too quickly and you sort of get a little lightheaded or dizzy, that's a response or an abnormal response of your blood pressure, unable to move as quickly or change as quickly as you move. And that's also due to fatigued adrenal glands. So those are a few symptoms that some people get.
So for everybody out there that's now self-diagnosing after hearing this, self-assessing,
we don't want to diagnose.
Self-assessing. What can we do to, you know, damper the effects of adrenal exhaustion?
Well, basically, you look at where all the stresses are in your life, and you change those as best you can. You know, so that's what I do in my office, and I always say to patients, well, you know, what can you change? Most people, as much as they might like to, they can't change their job right away. They can't change their boss. They have financial obligations. They just can't, you know, pull a, what was that movie when the guy walks out on this? You know, there's so many of those movies now, isn't there?
Office
you know,
space?
You just can't tell your boss, to go screw and walk out, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you can't change your job. You can't, like, necessarily change your life situations to a certain degree right away. You might be able to change commute times. You might be able to change your lunch time and that sort of stuff and make your day more effective, more efficient. But you can always change your diet. That's huge. That means reducing. You know, so obviously if your cortisol levels and your adrenal gland levels are a big part of balancing your blood sugar, then think about blood sugar. Think about your diet. You know, how much can you reduce carbohydrates, especially get rid of high fructose corn syrup, get rid of fake sugars. Like, you guys have no more diet sodas, right?
Right.
Yeah, so that, yes, or are you?
No. I'm still.
You're good.
Yeah.
I think Scott was the only one with the real quote-unquote problem.
Hey, I have to say, we have a loyal Nation listener that I noticed on his Facebook page said about the same time that I went off, he went off, and he mm-hmm. said that after, I'm trying to think now, I think he said after about 3 weeks, he had no cravings for any of that. It was tough for a couple weeks, but after a few weeks, he was good. So we're making some changes. We're affecting the world.
There you go. That's a huge a huge de-stress to your adrenal glands just by doing that.
I saw a dip in the Coca-Cola stock the other day.
Nice.
You don't like my Hokas?
You're still thinking about that comment?
I'm still a little bit on that.
Well, we have to be honest here.
No, I don't.
Two of the three, actually all three of us have tried the Hokas, And two of the three are proponents of the Hoka. The other, the third one actually sent her pair back.
I don't need any more.
You're going to get a letter from some attorney tomorrow.
I don't need any more stress in my life. My adrenals are already failing.
Now, I like my Hoka. Steve, have you ever strapped on a pair of Hokas?
I have only seen them. I have not touched them.
he hasn't strapped on moon boots.
You're a good thinking person, and you're a man of logic, and of science, and I know that you apply a great deal of facts to your decision and your position, if you haven't even touched them, or let them encase your lower extremity, your foot. And swallow it like
cushion your foot.
Oh man!
I'll tell you guys a quick little story. You know, growing up, my uncle used to work for Fila. You know, Fila Fila makes obviously some American shoes. They kind of made the four fingers, you know, instead of the five fingers, right? Recently, they're more popular in Europe. and Fila had two main what would you call them? Industrial plants, I guess, in the U.S. This is back in the 80s, early 90s. And one of them was in my town of northern Massachusetts, and my uncle ran the plant. So I was on the wear test team of their shoes. And, you know, I would wear anything. Then I got free shoes. I was in high school, and I'd wear them, and I'd write my little reports on them. And after I sent the one back saying, these shoes would only be comfortable sleeping in them. I've never asked me to wear something again.
I want to get back to the four fingers. I want to say, that is really poor, poor market research.
They didn't even count the man's toes.
They realized that they were targeting a very small percentage of the population.
Yeah.
So
sorry, Faith.
I would love to go on a run with you, Sock Doc, in a pair of Hokas. I think we'd have a great time, and you might be a convert. Yeah. I might be. I'm glad you're still open.
I will tell you, Don ran, as the nation members have heard. He's run his last 100 miler. He ran the last 75 miles in the Hokas and loved them.
Well, I put a regular pair of shoes on, you know, for the first 25, and then I had a crew ahead of me, so I could shed the Hoka anytime I wanted, and you know what? I didn't want to. I like
it. Hey, you know what? You know, if they work for you, then I say, for the most part, do it. But, you know.
Boy, do they look
goofy.
I mean,
they're just so built up.
Well, they're really not, though, because they're four. I mean, they are, but they're a 4-millimeter drop. And I definitely
Right, there's still a 4-millimeter drop, but the stack height is just huge.
Yeah.
I'm a short man.
Yeah.
And I like them.
With the Hokas, you're very tall.
With the Hokas, it makes me feel like I'm a little bit more important. And I don't know how we got on this. These discussions are like a trail run, aren't they?
Sometimes you take a wrong turn.
We were talking about cortisol levels and adrenal failure and all this sort of stuff.
I don't want to get off subject, but it's something I was reading this week. And think about this when you talk about drops. Because how Faith just mentioned a 4-millimeter drop, and a lot of minimalist shoes will say either a 4-millimeter drop or less, right?
Uh-huh.
But consider the 4-millimeter drop angle based off your foot size, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have a size 7 foot, that 4-millimeter drop is pretty steep.
Yeah.
If you have a 11 or 12 foot, that 4-millimeter drop is a whole lot less, right? People don't tend to think about that. They hear, oh, 4-millimeter drop, that's not much. Well, part of it depends on how big your foot is or how small your foot is. And also the drop is only part of the deal there when it comes to a minimalist type shoe, that the stack height is as important. I mean, you get a stack height of 23 to 19 is 4 millimeter, or you can get, you know, a 12 to 8, and there's a huge difference. But you also, a lot of people don't think about their foot size and that angle. And the bigger your shoe is, the more you can get away with a drop.
You know, I've thought about the drop, because when we're running long out there, you've got plenty of time to think. And
you
so and maybe I haven't thought enough about the hook is what you're thinking, Steve, but I'm still going to stand in them. Now,
okay.
You know, when we're going down the trail, you know, if we were running that 4-millimeter drop, if we were running on a completely flat surface, then mm-hmm. then I'm with you on the 4 millimeter drop. But isn't that every step we take out there going to be different on the drop because of the trail is never really totally flat as you're moving along?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And also, obviously, every time you hit, your foot's compressing somewhat too. You know, the only thing I can say is having been in the barefoot sort of community and running barefoot myself for a year and a half now, I used to think, well, 4 millimeter to zero is really no difference. 4, 6, you know, once you start getting under 12, they're all the same. But I can tell you, and a lot from my own experience, and also from what other people I hear have the same experience as this, is that if you're in a 4 millimeter shoe and you get down to a zero barefoot type shoe and you try and go back to the 4, it doesn't feel good anymore.
You can feel the difference.
You can never go back. So you recognize the 4, even though that's not much, and it might be a 3, and especially if you have a big foot, the ankle is not much, but it's there. And your body is aware of it, even that little bit that's there, once you sort of graduate out of it and try and go back. So that's what I can tell you there.
Yeah, I've wrestled with that because I've thought about as I'm going up and down the trail and there's a rock underneath me here and then there's a low spot in a hole or whatever. And I'm thinking, now where is this 4 millimeter drop really coming into play here? But you're 100% right. When you're in the 8 or the 0, you can feel the difference as soon as you step out there. You go, wow, there's a difference there.
But you're right. I mean, it's always changing. I mean, even if you put a pair of socks on, it's changing. I mean, you know, maybe as long as not the drop, but obviously, you know, stack height and all these things, it's, you know, it's all constantly changing. You know, I mean, not to go off on this, we got other things to talk about, but think about the size of your foot at the beginning of a 50 mile run and think about the size of your foot at the end of a 50 mile run. Different, right? I hope.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely different, right? I mean, you might go up a whole shoe size. So your gait's obviously a little bit different. Hopefully not too distorted, depending on how fatigued you are. But you're going to be landing in the shoe different, and because of the way your foot has now widened somewhat, and you know, it's going to be a little bit swollen. So it's all different.
I'm going to bring up a comment about the Hoka, and Faith brought it up, and I earlier, not on this conversation, but I tried to pretend I didn't really acknowledge her comment because I think it was strong, and I was concerned about that she was right. Not that I mind that she's right,
always
but
right.
Not that I was concerned about you were right. I was just a little bit worried about my Hoka choice, and so I'm just going to come clean, and I'm going to bring that very comment up, Faith, and you can let me know whether I'm accurate. She said that, and I'm pointing this to you, Dr. Steve.
You're the referee.
You're the referee. You're the arbitrator. Now, she said, Don, you're going to put all that cushion underneath your foot, and you are going to destroy your proprioceptive feedback and the muscles that are there to help give you that support and protect your knees, your foot, your hip. All these muscles that are there to do the job are going to stop working because you're running on those marshmallows. And I went, I just walked off or something. So was that your point, Faith?
That was a long time ago.
I know, but it still bothers me because I know you were probably right. Yeah. So, Steve, help us with this.
Oh, what do you want me to help you with?
Well, okay.
Tell her she's right.
I'm right. It's like orthotics. It's like you dampen the ability of your foot to recognize what's going on beneath you.
Gosh.
So it doesn't send signals to your brain.
Let's not forget how this conversation tonight started. I want to remain Faith's Facebook friend.
I know. I'm not her Facebook friend. You are. That's good. Pass me along some
stuff. I don't want to be unfriended after just 1 hour.
No, you know what? I think she has a valid point. That's one thing that I do have concern about because I've worked hard at trying to build up the muscles and do the things that I've done by running with a more, you know, 4 foot strike and developing that musculature and working through that learning curve. And all of a sudden I put myself with these moon shoes and I'm thinking, am I destroying all of that? I don't know.
Yeah, you are. End of conversation.
Okay. Yikes.
My question is what do you think of the shoes I'm wearing? I'm wearing Shape Ups when I run on the trail. And I was wondering,
I saw a pair of Shape Ups today and I
on the trail?
No, just on a person's foot. And I said, those look so much like my Hokas.
They do.
I know.
They do. I was like, save yourself $180 and go out and buy a pair of Shape Ups.
I know.
Yeah.
Joe Montana wears them.
Does he? Wait, Hokas or Shape Ups?
Shape Ups.
They must be good.
Goofballs.
I don't know, where did we go wrong here? Do we turn back now or just try to go back up the trail?
So we got into that. I will bring us back. We were talking about
curing adrenal stress
injuries. Cortisol, how to help lower cortisol levels. So you can help lower your cortisol levels by not creating gait compensatory changes too. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lower your stress, lower cortisol, run faster, run longer.
Is there a pill I can take to lower my cortisol? I'd like to take a simple pill.
Certain supplements will help you lower cortisol. There's a lot of B vitamins. That's actually one reason why people take B complexes. Magnesium is probably the main mineral for detoxifying cortisol in your liver. Doesn't mean you should go crazy on magnesium. In terms of athletes, though, the main mineral depletion or the main mineral deficiency, I guess we should say, is magnesium. Tends to be magnesium, and probably for a vitamin, I would pick vitamin B6. Even though some other ones might pick one of the other B vitamins, but and I would pick B6 because that helps detoxify so many of your hormones in your liver, stress hormones.
Especially. We're in a world where we can take all of the B complex if we'd like.
Take them all.
Well, you know, that's a great question.
Faith's.
I'm a simple man. You know, if I was to take a supplement.
A one a day.
Mm-hmm. Is there a good supplement for an athlete to be taking?
Well, I'm 100% against multivitamins, and I thoroughly share my views on my website. If you didn't know that,
I do now.
No, I'm. You know, it's all about balance in your body, and you cannot multis don't work. Multi synthetic high dose 100%, 1000%, 100 milligrams of all your Bs and everything. Don't correct dietary inadequacies. They don't correct dietary imbalances. All they do is create or keep the imbalances the same. I mean, I see often someone's taking a multi and they might show a need for magnesium or whatever, calcium, magnesium, whatever the mineral or vitamin is, and you give them that specific nutrient and they do great with it. They see the changes to make up with that deficiency, but you won't see that by giving them a multi. Very rarely anyway, unless someone's very nutrient deprived, which we don't see too much actually in this country. So multis just don't work. I'm all for whole food type multis, like, you know, freeze dried fruits, vegetables and that sort of thing. You know, the whole food type where you're getting all these phytonutrients and antioxidants in there. And it's kind of like a little plate of organic vegetables and fruits and some herbs, but definitely not for, you know, these one a day, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 things in there that people think, oh, I'm going to take this and it's going to give me some performance or health enhancement or it's going to cover my basis for what I missed in my diet today. That's far from the truth.
That's good to know. Flintstone chewables.
I call Flintstone adult Flintstones. Those are really bad for you. A lot of them still have hydrogenated fat in them, believe it or not. It's crazy. So, and you get in something like that, all the binders, fillers, you know, colors, preservatives in them. I mean, good luck absorbing any of that stuff anyway. It's just not going
to
happen.
So it's just good to eat good, raw, natural food.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to try and get your nutrition from your diet as much as you can. You know, it's funny because I film all my videos in my office and you guys have seen them. And I'm on my table or around my treatment table. And in the back I have literally 1,000, I haven't never counted them, but at least 1,000.
Looks like a pharmacy.
There. It's a small pharmacy in there, isn't it? A lot of people think that I'm like a big supplement pusher, but a lot of those are just used for testing. And, you know, I mean, granted, my average patient might be taking 2 or 3 supplements. I'd say that's probably the average is maybe 3 if I had to think about the average. You know, people don't walk out of – they actually walk into my office with shopping bags of supplements, literally. I've seen people bring in hundreds of bottles of supplements. And, you know, they leave with a whole lot less than what they started with. But, yeah, those are more for testing and not for actually giving people. And a lot of those are amino acids and hormones and things to check somebody on to see how they respond through all the various testing that I do. So but I'm all for definitely whole food supplements are best way to go.
So, Steve, is that how you get all those bottles up there? You take them from your patients?
No. Oh. I usually throw them away. Those okay. are just other accumulated ones. Yeah, that's how I get my stock. And that's how I get my shoes, too. I take their shoes.
You won't be taking any Hokas soon. What, I don't think we need to hit a little bit on the NSAIDs. I think. Well,
yeah. We should.
Can we? And let's talk about where this list is. I mean, it's on your website at doc.com.
And we'll link it to the podcast
where you can read in depth and in detail about.
It's a good series. It's a 4-part series. It's very, very good. Simple, easy to read, fast read, with jam packed with all the micronutrients you need.
micro details. And also areas for comments. So people challenge position or ask specific questions, and Dr. Ganjimi is there to go ahead and answer them. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Okay. NSAIDs. What's your take on those as far as utilization on? I can edit this.
Yeah,
we already hit that.
No, we haven't talked about NSAIDs.
Not really. Well, we talked about it briefly, just sort of like we talked about it briefly with the beginning with how people take them all the time with ice and preventative and sort of the go-to.
But we need to take a big scoop out of this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the big scoop is, I mean, this is half to half. It's really parts three and part four of the whole series. So it's half of it, and maybe even a little bit more. NSAIDs work by balancing what are called eicosanoids. That's the big word for the day. Which are hormone-like substances in your body made from fats. So we all know about, you know, people say, well, take fish oil or take, get good fats from nuts and seeds and fish and flax and all this stuff. You know? So it comes down to you want the proper balance of basically good fats, plenty of good fats in your diet and not too many bad fats and the right types of fats. So, you know, you want some omega-3s, the fish oil. You don't want to be eating too many or maybe none at all of those vegetable oil fats like a lot of people eat all day long. Canola oil, not really canola oil, but safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, soy, these vegetable oils that a lot of people cook with. They're used in so many packaged foods. They're sort of a staple in households, in American households anyway.
A good replacement for those would be
The three fats you should have in your house, and the only three fats I tell my patients they should have in their house are
coconut,
butter. Sorry?
Coconut?
Yes, coconut.
When?
Butter.
And 1040 weight.
And the third one. and olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, which you don't cook with, you would use that. But the two to cook with are coconut oil and butter. And you can also use lard, too, which a lot of people think is gross, but it's actually a good fat if you can get an organic type of lard. Butter is a great fat, one of my favorite fats to cook with. And coconut oil is right up there, too.
So do not cook in olive oil.
Well, you can definitely lightly stir fry, pan fry in olive oil, but the smoke point of olive oil is right around 350. So once you start hitting temperatures over 350, you start to denature oil. Here's the thing. Fats, good fats, don't like heat and they don't like light. So whenever you get, so here's a question people ask. They say, well, sunflowers are good for me, correct? Yeah, they are to a certain extent. Then why is sunflower oil so bad? Why is the same with, you know, grapeseed oil? You know, why are these things so bad? And the reason is because they've been refined. And if you take them out of their natural context of, you know, where they are in their respective nut or seed, and you remove them, the oil's going to start to go bad very quickly. But we, in society, obviously, we want these, or we use these oils to cook with. So therefore, they need to be refined. So now you can heat them to these super high temperatures. And basically what happens is when you take them out of their natural context, you have created a good anti-inflammatory fat or you've taken a good anti-inflammatory fat and you've created it into a pro-inflammatory fat due to this refining process that now can withstand heat and light. And that is why you can't cook with fish oil or flax oil, because you'll denature it right away. It probably wouldn't taste good either.
Your food would taste fishy. Oil.
It would taste fishy, yes. But you know, you're going to destroy it right away because it's going to oxidize. And you take a saturated type fat like butter or coconut oil, then you can heat these things to a much higher temperature. The fats are very beneficial for you. That's another thing I talk about on how you want. You need some inflammatory, good inflammatory type fats in your body. And that comes from what's known as arachidonic acid. It's another little chemical term that we talk about on, or I talk about on the series, and to, so you can create just enough inflammation from these fats that make up actually a big part of your nervous system, especially your brain. These AA fats, arachidonic acid, very high in butter, very high in egg yolks, high in cream, and even grass-fed beef and other grass-fed animals. And these fats are very important. But what's happened is the whole chemistry has been completely distorted over the years because everybody says, well, too much arachidonic acid is inflammatory. And that's true, because what happens is that the average person creates arachidonic acid from too many of those vegetable oils. They're eating a lot of corn oil. They're eating a lot of soybean oil. They're eating a lot of safflower, sunflower oil. And coupled with high carbohydrates, refined foods, they convert those anti-inflammatory fats into pro-inflammatory arachidonic acid rather than beneficial
arachidonic acid. That sounded like a dinosaur.
That doesn't it? But rather than beneficial arachidonic acid that you would get in egg yolk. So you're creating different types of a hormone-like substance that will make or break you depending on where you got it and how and what you're doing with it. If that was confusing, I discuss it more on the Sock Doc site. And it is a little bit, and that's why it's sort of, you know, you might end up with a very similar end product, but how you got there has a lot to do with how it affects you.
Mm-hmm. And by taking them artificially, it's not beneficial for us at all.
Artificially,
in terms of the NSAID, like ibuprofen, Motrin, just
right. So if you have too many inflammatory type fats and not enough anti-inflammatory fats. So if you have too many pro-inflammatory fats and not enough anti-inflammatory fats, then what the NSAIDs do is they block the enzyme to create the final hormone-like substance that basically either creates inflammation or dampens inflammation. And if you have a lot of inflammation going on because you have a lot of these pro-inflammatory fats, then those NSAIDs are going to help lower that. They're also going to help. They're also going to, unfortunately, lower even some of the anti-inflammatory eicosanoids that you've made too. So, but you're going to see the effect more on the pro-inflammatory if you have a lot of those. Conversely, if you're eating well and you're healthy, and say you just get unlucky and you fall in a hole while you're running, you get in a car accident, you have some traumatic type of accident, you didn't actually create an injury, but you just bad luck happened to you. And you already are a healthy person and you have a lot of anti-inflammatory type eicosanoids, fats, and you have very little or only a normal, healthy, natural amount of pro-inflammatory fats. Now, if you take that NSAID, they say, well, I'm just going to take this and hopefully it'll help me get over this inflammation quicker. Well, now you're going to cause perhaps even more inflammation because you're going to lower your anti-inflammatory levels, creating more inflammation from taking an anti-inflammatory drug.
So I hear you saying that our bodies know, there's a word there.
It's what did knows. He just say?
I don't know. Let me take another run at it. Are you ready? Our body knows what it's doing, that it isn't just creating this inflammation by a mistake, that it's a precise and an exact science. It understands what's happening, and it has measures to create it and to get rid of it. And we get in the way many times with our own maneuvers, such as NSAIDs, right. And we don't eat right. So
things get out of control. Maybe things get so out of control because of our poor diets that we start to take some medications just to try to counteract it.
Absolutely. So, right. So if you take an NSAID and it works better for you, you know something's not working correctly in your body. It can't be, or else the drug wouldn't work, and it would actually even make you worse if things were working correctly.
So we need to clean our diet up so that our bodies can do what it knows how to do well. And if you're jacked up, you better look at what you're eating and what you're doing.
We need to detox is what I need to do.
And I think the paradox is that people take these anti-inflammatory drugs thinking that they're going to help themselves, and they inevitably are really just, they're not helping at all.
And delaying recovery.
Exactly.
Detox. But what if it hurts?
And you truly can create more inflammation. And it's a biochemical reaction. I am not making that up. What if it hurts?
Yeah. What if it hurts and you want the pain to go away? What can I take?
Yeah, well, that's always a question. You know, you say to someone, "Well, if you take it and it helps, you know, well then they say, well, what do I take instead? Or you know, or if I take it now, if it doesn't work, well, that's good. But what do I do now? Well, compression is great, you know, in terms of an injury. I mean, here's the thing: if the pain is so bad and you need to put ice on it to dampen the pain, which is probably one of the benefits of ice, is just dampening pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to do that rather than, you know, take a painkiller or narcotic or drink a crazy amount of alcohol to dampen your pain, the ice is probably a better idea. But don't think that the ice is, you know, it's if you're still having to ice every, you know, 10 minutes or 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off or whatever your regimen is for, you know, days after an injury, I mean, you're missing the boat while you're still injured, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pain is obviously, you know, we all know this. I mean, it's worth saying again. I mean, pain is your body's, your body telling your brain, hey, you know, stay the hell off that injury. You know, don't walk on that ankle, stay off your knee so it can heal up. It's a protective mechanism. But obviously, it's no fun to be in pain. You know, sometimes the pain is too much to bear. And I'm obviously all for lowering that pain level while something is healing. And if you can do it, if you need to stick some ice on that, I'm all for that. You know, but I don't really give a pass too much on NSAIDs. I've never even recommended an NSAID even once, and that's the honest truth. So there's other ways around it. You know, if you get an injury, I mean, here's the thing. What's the first thing you do? There's three things you do when you get injured. Do you know what they are?
Cry.
You cry. You might swear.
Yeah.
So there's a verbal point to it, right? Like, oh shit or something.
Yeah, and go to your website.
No, so there's that. The second thing you do is you always look at the injury, right? You naturally look at your injury, so your body recognizes the injury.
Right.
And the third thing you do is, what's that?
You touch it then?
Yep, and the third thing you do is you touch it or rub it, because mechanical receptors in your body will block pain receptors. So rubbing something, touching it, or even, you know, pressing around an injury will help to block pain receptors to some degree, you know? And that's why, like, if you say worse, you know, you break something, you know, you don't want to be pressing on the bone that you broke, but working the muscles around the break, obviously you're going to get some just distraction of your mind to the, you know, bone too. It's kind of like saying, you know, my foot hurts, I'm going to smack myself in the head. But, you know, if you can work the area around the injury too, as I said, as we talked about earlier, it's going to help because those muscles are going to be involved. That's part of the compression and light trigger point work. But also, you're going to there's a mechanical receptor pain dampening benefit to that.
Do you have any recommendations for some natural herb or anything like that for pain relief? Because you said no to NSAIDs, but there may be alternatives. What are your thoughts?
I am on my website right now. I will on part four of the series, I give 10 little suggestions on what you can do. And number nine, I have herbs that definitely work. Some work better than others. I'm a big fan of quercetin, which is a natural antioxidant, antihistamine. It's actually great for allergies. It's a great anti-inflammatory. Quercetin is the highest concentration of quercetin, I believe, are in an onion peel. Not too many people eat those. You guys might, but I don't. And also quercetin is very high in you know, the white part of an orange that kind of sticks to the orange after you peel it.
Oh yeah.
High in quercetin. That's a great supplement to take, and good anti-inflammatory. Boswellia is a good anti-inflammatory, and so is turmeric, which is also known as curcumin, sort of that reddish brown type of herb that is pretty popular. Those are all pretty good herbs. And yeah, you know, so some people might do great on quercetin, another person might not see any difference, and someone else might do great on turmeric. I mean, definitely think with the advice of your physician, you could take this, you know.
Scott mentioned detoxing. I'm back to a couple of comments. Is there any...
You like to bounce around a lot.
I do. Well, yeah. I wanted to say something
all
back then.
All over the place. I'm used to this now, though. I'm good with it.
Good. Hey, is there any type of detoxing that a product... I've seen that stuff online where you drink this stuff and then that, like, an alien comes out. And you put it in a mason jar and you post it online. I mean, that's what I see happening.
It's called an enema.
Exactly. You know, detoxing is so much of detoxing, it's kind of BS. A healthy human being is always naturally detoxing. And what most people do, you know, people go through these detox diets, and what do they all say? They say, oh, I feel like crap. And what think about it. If you're truly naturally detoxifying, you should only feel better. What happens is people do these detox diets, and because they're so toxic and they're not detoxifying properly, all they do is mobilize these toxins. They mobilize them from their tissues into their bloodstream and back into the tissues again, and they feel like shit the whole time. So that's all they're doing is mobilizing toxins. They're actually not getting rid of something. And it's like anything. If you feel the need to detox, well, what do you want to detox? Are you trying to detox heavy metals? Are you trying to detox bad food? Are you trying to detox overtraining? Because, well, you could say I have to detox from high cortisol levels. Well, you don't need to go on some fasting diet to do that. You can just lower your training. If you want to detoxify, say, aspartame from your diet like you guys did, you don't need to detox from that. Stop drinking it. You're naturally going to detoxify from it. So it's more important to realize what you shouldn't be doing. And a lot of times you just need to stop doing that rather than try and counteract it with some crazy detoxification program.
I like it. No aliens, though.
Two aliens a day.
Post it on Facebook.
Two aliens a day.
Did
you have something?
Nope.
I was going to say, this is every time we have the Sock Doc on, I always learn something. I appreciate your candor. I appreciate your
putting up with us.
Yeah, really.
Most of our comments.
Especially our bouncing around from topic to topic. But it's all good stuff. It's going to help us be better runners. It's going to help us be healthier. Hopefully we can, with this kind of information, we can run much longer and further in our life. Our longevity will last.
And break the cycle, this chronic inflammatory cycle that doesn't need to be there. Because if we were, in fact, born to run, built to run, why should we end up with an inflammatory response every time we're done running? We shouldn't.
They didn't have NSAIDs.
Do you guys have aches and pains after you run, or daily aches and pains just moving around and doing your daily stuff?
Not since my Hoka. No. just kidding, Steve. I just want to throw
that. I don't believe that.
No, you know what? I have. You know, if I'm out there and putting in the extra effort, and, you know, that was part of our discussion with Dr. Cucuzella. Do we train too hard? You know, the people that are, you know, as a group, as the type A group that are, you know, we're really trying to load, you know, build the miles, our building phase, or now we're trying to get some speed work done. As a group collectively, do we find ourselves pushing too hard? And is that why we're always have this chronic inflammatory process? Or is it a combination of both? You know, this overtraining / you know, under nutrient or improper nutrient status that we're in.
Yeah, I think exactly that's what it is. I mean, the harder and longer you train, the more everything else has got to be right for you. In other words, the better your diet has to be, the more sleep, the more, you know, beneficial sleep, you know, not just logging in hours, but actually getting good sleep. I mean, everything, you know, your stress levels have to be lower. And if those aren't, and this is what I, you know, Mark and I have such a very similar philosophy. He actually, interesting enough, he just sent me this thing. He's working with his hospital up there in West Virginia. And I think that's some state out east here or something like that. Have you guys heard of that? West Virginia?
Yeah.
But Mark does a great job, I know. And, you know, he's getting his hospital to change the way their dietary plan of how they're feeding, like, patients. Like, you know, hey, let's not give them a Coke and a hamburger after surgery, but let's give them these healthful foods. And he sent me this diet plan to look over, and I didn't see – it's funny because he asked me for recommendations. I said, well, you need to list these fats here. And I wrote him, it's just about, as I'm about to push send to the email, I scrolled down. I'm like, oh, he already has them all here. And it was literally the same fats that I wrote, which was really cool to see because you don't see that too often, especially when you have egg yolks and butter on there. Mm-hmm. And Mark already had that on there with the nutritionist that he's working with up there. You know, most people think, oh, fish oil and vegetable oils are the only fats you should be eating, which is far from the truth, you know. If you could only pick two fats to eat every day, butter and coconut. Butter and coconut. And after you're done that, have some more butter and coconut fat. That's what I say. And I think Mark agrees with me for the most part on that, depending on someone's situation.
So, you mentioned quality sleep hours, quality. And like we talk about quality training miles, not junk miles, where you make sure that you're running with a purpose, that you're just not out there checking the box in the logbook saying, yeah, I got my 10 miles in this day, but they were a good 10 and they had a purpose and there was a reason for it. And so you're saying the same with sleep hours. We just can't, a sleep hour isn't a sleep hour. You can have quality sleep hours.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, are you sleeping 8 hours and you're tossing and turning the whole night, getting up 3 times to run to the bathroom or slog over to the bathroom? And, you know, are you sleeping 6 to 8 hours, falling asleep within a few minutes, 10 minutes and getting up and feeling, you know, not throwing the blinds open and saying good morning to the world, but, you know, feeling good when you get up and you don't have to, you know, you don't need your coffee to have to wake you up. I mean, that's good restful sleep, you know, going through the night without having to wake up even once. And as I say on the sleep articles on the Sock Doc site, it's actually, that's another sign, as Faith was asking earlier, signs of cortisol excess, actually signs of aldosterone depletion back to the mineral corticoids of your adrenal glands. If you're training too hard and you're dumping aldosterone and you're throwing off your electrolytes, the two symptoms from that are you'll crave salt, maybe salty foods like potato chips, or you just want to put a lot of salt on things. I'm all for putting salt on things, but I'm not for craving salt because that's a sign that you're losing too much salt. But the other sign is you have to get up at night to go to the bathroom. Your body naturally increases aldosterone levels at night, so you don't have to get up to go pee. And if the aldosterone levels are imbalanced with the time of day, out of sync or lower, then you have to get up to go to the bathroom. And it has nothing to do with the amount of water that you drank before bed, because every night I drink, 20 ounces before I go to bed within 10 minutes. And the only time I got to get up to go to the bathroom is if I'm under a little bit too much stress. I might have to get up once, but most nights, you know, at least 6 times a week, I'm sleeping through the night because my aldosterone levels are where they should be. So that's never normal.
Awesome. Well, we don't want to rob too much of your quality sleep time because it's late back there on the East Coast.
It is.
And we're...
good conversation, though.
We enjoy it.
We really do.
And it's a lot of fun. We appreciate it. Sock Doc, oh, no doubt, we will like to come back and grab some more topics and have some good general discussion and good fun because we always enjoy it. You can find... We will link the Sock Doc's website address, sock-doc.com.
As well as the article. As well as the 4-part article we talked about today.
Will be there as well. And I'll remind runners, if you have a condition, because you have addressed several of common running type injuries on your website, YouTube type videos, 6 to 8 minutes with a one-on-one consult with Dr. Gan Jimmy, who will tell you what you need to know about IT band syndrome, plantar fasciitis. He goes into several different conditions that are common questions and demonstrates one, what do you do about it? And where do you work on these soft tissue parts that are away from the injury? And he shows you that. So, and you can watch it as many times as you want, and the price is still the same. Free.
This is a website that you need to have bookmarked. If you are a runner.
It's Scott's homepage.
It is. It's my screensaver too. If you are a runner, you need to have this, you need to visit this site frequently and often, and you know, if you have a lunch break and you're eating your very healthy fruits, vegetables, and nuts.
And stick of butter.
And stick of butter.
And knocking it back with some
coconut milk.
Coconut oil.
You know, take 5 minutes and peruse the site.
It's good stuff. So thank you, Sock Doc, Trail Runner Nation members. Oh, go ahead, Stephen. I'm going to cut you off.
Thank you. No.
Awesome.
You're good.
Thanks and good night.
Trail Runner Nation members, go to, where do we go?
TrailRunnerNation.com.
And our Twitter?
Twitter is We Are Nation.
Come out and,
and Facebook. We do some Facebook stuff.
Type in Trail Runner Nation into the search bar.
You'll find us. Now go out and
run.
Mas. Steve, thanks.
All right.
Hey, thank your family, especially your wife, for letting us keep you up so late. We appreciate it.
Go drink 20 ounces of water and go to bed.
Yeah, I'll let you know how I have a triathlon in 2 weeks.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, Faith is turning to the spandex side of this sport.
We call them tri geeks, you know. I didn't want to piss any tri people off, but you know, it's interesting. You know, I've been out of the triathlon sport for this is really I haven't done Ironman for 2 years, but I stopped my last Ironman in 2010, so it's been 2 years, two seasons. But last year I still did a couple, you know, like half Ironmans and stuff. So this is my first year in 20 years of not racing in triathlon. And, you know, I run more with trail runner people and, you know, do more of that MoveNet stuff we talked about. And it's different when I see triathletes now. I look at them and I go, I fucking wore that. I go, I look like that freaking idiot. And my wife's like, yeah, you did that for 20 years.
Awesome. So, all right.
It is a whole nother crowd, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what's fun about it. You know, the trail runners are their crowd and the tri guys are their and gals are their crowd. And
they're very serious. They're a very serious crowd though.
Oh yeah.
I think as a whole, they're better athletes.
Shit with them. Yeah. I mean, you can't I have a great time talking with you guys. I really mean that. But you can't, this would never work with a triathlon group. It just wouldn't. I know it wouldn't.
They're AAA. You know, we may be A, but they're AAA type.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, you're not even A. I mean, I'm A. They're more than AAA. I mean, they're hardcore. You know, a typical triathlete. Do you work on triathletes, Don, in your office?
Yeah, I've got a few that come in here.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with triathletes is they will gladly spend $2,000 on a pair of race wheels that'll save them a second in a race, but they won't want to pay out of pocket to have their injury fixed.
Yeah, I've got those. You know? There's some consistencies across the nation. There's one right there.
Exactly. You know, so I got to have those new wheels, but I can't afford your treatment. Anyway, and you know, trail runners are just all damn poor anyway. They have no money, so
we can't even afford a road.
But you know, those freaking Hokas are like $150 or $170, aren't they?
180.
That's why we're hoping to get about 2,000 miles out of them, because by the time we're finished running in them, they're about the same sole height as normal shoes.
You know what? Faith's comment did bother me a little bit because I think she was right. You know, I think if all of a sudden,
right, yeah.
I know, you know,
always
right.
Did we already say that? Did we already say that she is right? Yeah,
we've got that. I'll make that a part of the loop. But you can't take that away from your body and all those protective mechanisms and the small intrinsic muscles that are there dampening the shock and you give it to the shoe. What do you expect when you put something else on? And to that point, I put on a pair of regular shoes, our minimalist shoe, and I felt like the earth was giving me a beating because I think I had turned off everything.
So scary.
Yeah. Gosh, I got a pair of Hoka. You want me to send you? What size do you wear, Steve? I've got a few miles left on these.
I'll burn them.
I don't know what to do. I think there's a hazardous waste permit to burn these things. So much
manufactured in France, imported from France.
Yeah.
They don't have the same EPA requirements as we do here.
It's always fun talking with you, Steve. I think you've got a great sense of humor, and it's a good mix, good chemistry. We enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, great. All right.
See you
next time.
Bye. Oh, the Sock Doc. What has he done? I'm going to have to get rid of my Hokas. I keep my Hokas. What do I do? Faith, you sent yours back. I do love my Hoka.
Have them as part of the rotation so your body doesn't forget.
I'm keeping mine.
Yeah, but what about your invisible shoe? Where is that in the rotation?
You know, I don't run in the invisible shoe, but I do wear them around.
Mm-hmm. For fashion statement?
Yeah. No, my wife doesn't let me leave the house.
So it looks like a biblical character.
Yeah. I think that there has to be, I think, we've talked about this, and one of the themes of Trail Runner Nation is there has to be balance. Balance.
You know, Faith has been on a ball over here all night, bouncing up and down. This girl has ADD.
I always get something. I get nuggets out of these things. And the one nugget I got was, some of the things that we've been told for years and years and years is bad for your diet, like butter. You know, I like butter. It's not like you eat a cube of butter a day, but, I don't like margarine. I don't like any of that stuff. And this, he reinforces that. The whole thing about olive oil, I have switched cooking from vegetable oil to olive oil because I heard olive oil was good. Well, guess what?
It's not as good as other choices.
Mm-hmm. Right. I shouldn't be using the olive oil as a cooking oil, mm-hmm. but I should use it as like a salad dressing.
A tanning oil.
Yes, and cooking with coconut oil tastes fantastic.
Coconut oil? Here's my problem, guys.
What is it?
I hate coconut.
Oh, what?
Hate it. Although I've tried the coconut milk and, the flavored stuff, and it's not too bad.
Coconut water. Oh, man, I'm addicted to that stuff. I don't have enough money to satisfy my desire for coconut water.
But here's the other thing
that
I learned. The ice is no good. The NSAIDs, I'm going to have to break away from that. But I need to break out my recovery compression socks again. I wore those for quite a while, after we got those. And I think they worked.
You need to put them back on.
Recovery tights, that's where it's at.
You have some of those?
Yep.
Really?
Fantastic.
How long does it take you to get in them?
Don't ask me that. Ask me how long it takes to get out of them.
How long does it take to get out?
Longer.
Take some time.
if you took an ice bath, then you could take them off real quick.
Speaking of eating butter.
See how he just bounces around?
I was at a restaurant. Well, it wasn't really a restaurant. It was a chow hall. When I was in the Marines, and there's a guy in the Navy. Who knows where he was from? But he was taking pads of butter and scraping them on his bottom teeth. I hope he's not out there listening to this. Chances are he's not a trail runner. And he was eating butter by the pad. Maybe he knew something. Maybe that was Dr. Gan Jimmy.
I'm just floored. That is gross.
It was gross. But
although I'll eat popcorn with like 5 cubes of butter on it.
Melted and poured over the top. Gross. So it's soggy on the bottom. Scrape a little salt with it.
Buttered popcorn.
Anyways, Trail Runner Nation member, thanks for joining us.
Oh, Faith, breaking the party up like a mom.
Because you're like all over the place.
Well, Dr. Gan Jimmy, he set us straight on a few things, didn't he?
You see that?
just how you flips it around.
We're trying to end this.
Oh, okay. I didn't recognize that was an end.
Go ahead, Faith.
Trail Runner Nation members, thanks for joining us. Now go out and run.
We said that earlier.
Moss. You wear them around like you're cooler than me. And you never say hey or remember my name. And it's probably because you think you're cooler than me. Got your highbrow shoes on your feet, and you wear them around like it ain't shit. But you don't know the way that you look when your steps make that much noise. Shh, I got you all figured out. You need everyone's eyes just to feel seen behind your makeup. Nobody knows who you even are. Who do you think that you are? Could write you a song to make you fall in love. I would already have you up under my arm. I used up all of my tricks. I hope that you like this, but you probably won't. You think you're cooler than me. You got designer shades just to hide your face, and you wear them around like you're cooler than me. And you never say hey or remember my
got your high brow.